Our seminar today will be about the Srihansa Dutta. It's one of the writings of Srila Rupa Goswami, and it's very interesting. It's one of his earliest works, and we'll get to that. But, so I wanted to start and show you just a few slides. It's part of the PowerPoint, which was not really made for this presentation, so some of the slides are giving lots of information that's not relevant to us, and I'll just skip them. There are a few pictures I think that will be very nice. Let's see if I can get the long distance thing to work. It worked. Yay. So here's a map of the region of Bengal. I happen to have a stick with me, which is very convenient. It's a useful thing to have for various purposes. The birthplace of Rupa and Sanata is here in the Jessore district. The border between India and Bangladesh is roughly here along the river, just a little bit into India on the bank of the Patna River. A is Ramakeli. Ramakeli is the place where Rupa and Sanatan later on resided when they were engaged in the service of the Bengal government of the Nawab Hussein Shah. Jessore is then the whole district, and their village is somewhere in this area. So Mayapur will be approximately somewhere here, a little bit up north from the Jessore district, so just that we get an idea. So we can see that the birthplace of Rupa and Sanata is not very far actually from Mayapur. I mean, very close. It's easy to reach. One could, in a few hours, really get there. It's from Chakda, if you know where Chakda is, which is, well, you get Shantipur, Ramagat, and then Chakda, right? On the way from Mayapur to Calcutta, 60 kilometers to the border from Chakda, and then it's Rupa Sanatan's birthplace, maybe another 50 kilometers into Bangladesh, and that's about it. So it's not like... At the moment, foreigners can again go in and out of India freely. I mean, the restrictions that were there before are lifted, so it's just something we don't do. It's just, we don't go into Bangladesh, but yeah, what can I say? The pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in 1947, when there was a partition in India, they cut the pastime places of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in half. And just basically the eastern part of those pastimes disappeared into Bangladesh and became covered by Muslim culture. But many, many things are there in Bangladesh, many places of relevance. On the very border, of course, we find Benapol, the residence of Haridas Thakur, at least for some time, where that prostitute came in the night and so on. And when we go there, we find today a temple with a deity of Haridas and a deity of the Lakshahira, the prostitute, right? Which is in itself also okay. Not that you expect, you know. When I went to Haridas's place, I thought that as I was going to go there, I was meditating, what shall I do when I come? And I thought, I will chant many, many rounds and so on. And I did chant some, but I never thought before that I would wind up doing what I did. When I saw that prostitute and the deity of the prostitute, I remembered that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it mentioned that the prostitute was commissioned by Ramachandra Khan, and Ramachandra Khan was a district authority, and he said he would send his constable with her and arrest Haridas as soon as he would have union with her. But She said, no, the first night I will go alone, and then the second night you can send your constable. Which I take that she had more than professional interest. She had some, yeah, she had some attraction also. So there was lust involved. And this prostitute was the personification of lust. She transformed into a devotee that could chant 300,000 names a day. So when I was there, in that place, I prayed to become free from lust. In the place of Rupa and Sanatana. Okay, these are the deities that are found in the temple at that birthplace. The quiet monarchs, and just the reminders of Rupa and Sanatana. You see that there was a lot, it's just on a small lake, and it's right next to it. You see on the left side a little bit of the building and the temple building. And yeah, here we're seeing a little bit of information. It is in the Lagu Tosani, which is a commentary on Sanatana Goswami's writing, Vaishnava Tosani. In the Lagu Tosani, Jiva Goswami, he gives the family lineage of Rupa and Sanatana, and of course his own, since he is a nephew. I fit it all in one slide, you know, in a size of font that was big enough, you know, so there is more information. But it's not all relevant to us. But basically, it describes that in South India, in a very, in an influential Brahmin family, in belonging to the Sarasvat community, there were many Sarasvat Brahmanas who later, when the Sarasvati River became dry and droughts began to appear in that area, who dispersed all over India. And a certain community of them came to Karnataka. It is found that in the Sarasvat communities, the worship of the deities are all the major deities. There are Shaktas who are worshipped Durga Devi, there are Shaivites who are worshipping Lord Shiva, and Vaishnavas. In the 13th century, when Madhvacharya began to vigorously preach in the south, then amongst the southern Saraswat Brahmanas, many became Vaishnavas, and there are still many, many Vishnu temples, and the Saraswat Brahmanas are very influential in that community. So, apparently, the Brahmin community that Rupa and Sanatan hailed from was a Vaishnav community. And within the family, there was ample of land holdings. And as often happens about property, there was some dispute in the family, and one of the brothers was very greedy and took over the lands of his relative, who had to basically leave that area. And but because they had been zamindars, landholders, for a long time, in India, being a landholder oftentimes meant more than just having a little land. It basically meant that you were governing a particular district, and that at least certain villages on the land were dependent on the landholder. So that when the family in due course of time shifted, they shifted several times before they came to Bengal. It was not just the family that settled in Bengal, but it was an entire community of Brahmanas that settled in Bengal. So in this village, Prembagh, near Fatihabad, there was the family of Rupa Sanatan, who at that time, of course, had other names, but some names are only the internet offers us some names, but Srila Bhaktisiddhanta rejects that. So these whatever names we find, there's Amar and Santosh, Rupa Sanatan, but we don't
Let's go back to some other bit of research, these names. There is a book called the Gaudiya Vaishnav Abhidhan, which was published in 1959 written by a certain devotee named Haridas, whose book absorbed information that came from the Vaishnav Manjusa, which were notes of an encyclopedia by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. But he went much further and he absorbed all kinds of information. So these days, the Gaudiya Vaishnav Abhidhan is by far the most encyclopedic work on the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in Bengal. Not everything in the Gaudiya Vaishnav Abhidhan is accepted by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta or by our line then. It has to be thoroughly researched. One of the researchers in the field has been His Holiness Balabh Tirtha Maharaj from Gaudiya Math, who has a PhD in, I forgot what it was, something related to Indology. And he wrote a book, I think it's called something like Sri Chaitanya and His Associates, or the Parisat. It deals basically with the Parisat of Lord Chaitanya, the Associates of Lord Chaitanya. So he often quotes the Gaudiya Vaishnav Abhidhan and sometimes sets it straight, right, from time to time. His book is very nice, and I can highly recommend it. There is more information. The point is Rupen Sanatan grew up in that village alone with their younger body brother, who is known as Sri Valabha or Anupam, in a village which apparently had a Vaishnav tradition. Possibly even, some scholars say, even Krishna worship was there. Maybe. I didn't see it substantiated. Then Rupa and Sanatan moved later to Ramakeli, which was a village. These days, Ramakeli is about 45 minutes drive from Goda.
This is still the birthplace. Some
artistic pictures. One sec.
Yeah, just if you wonder where will you stay when you go there, I put in this slide to show you there's an ISKCON temple. Behind the temple there's a guest house as well. So, sort of a mini Mayapur imitation. Kind of nice place. So you don't have to worry. You can really visit that place. Come on. Yeah. These are the deities there. And as we see often in our temple, Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, here we see Rupa and Sanatana sitting next to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, which is nice, you know, it's sort of kind of appealing. Here there are a lot of dates, and I'm not going to get into all of them, but Lord Chaitanya appeared in 1486 in Navadvip. He took sannyas at age 24, which takes us to 1510. So 1510, Lord Chaitanya left Navadvip, and he went upon the request of his mother to Jagannath Puri, and then from Jagannath Puri, he came back in the direction of Vrindavan, but never went to Vrindavan. Instead, he went to Ramakeli and Kanainathashala. The meeting with between Rupa and Sanatana, who stayed in Ramakeli, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been dated somewhere between 1511 and latest 1514, somewhere dates are a little flexible in India, as everything, you know. Nothing is completely cut and dry. Yeah. So anyway, what to say? The interesting thing for our discussion today, and that you see in red, is that before the visit of Lord Chaitanya, he completed the book, the Sri Hansa Dutta. Hansa Dutta means Hansa is referring to the swan, and Dutta means messenger. So the idea is that it is a poem which is describing a particular genre. It is the Dutta, the messenger genre. It had been done before. The well-known Bengali poet Kalidas, he wrote the Megha Dutta, where a cloud became the messenger. And then there were others who were less known, but one particular poet wrote the Manasa Dutta, where the mind became the messenger, which I think is an interesting theme. And then we could all write about that, that send our mind as a messenger to Krishna. And that's not going to be easy. And first of all, you have to convince that mind. I don't want to go. Second of all, you have to make the mind purify it a little so that it can go before Krishna. So I think if we would all write a story called the Manasa Dutta, we could get some interesting stories for sure. I have not seen, I heard about that, the manuscript. I'm still looking for it. If you come Manasa Dutta, you can keep your eyes open if you find it. Yeah, now you have some power for these things. That would be really good. So it's one of the earliest works. You can see that, for example, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, is written about 30 years later. So that's a whole different thing. So it's really, Hansa Dutta is one of the earliest work of Rupa and Sanatana. At the end of the, in most of his books, let me say it like that, if you go to the Nectar of Devotion, or the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the third verse, there is reference to Sanatana Goswami. And there, basically, it is described that Rupa is offering the book as a temple of peace to Sanatana Goswami. In the Hansa Dutta, in the end, Rupa says, "And I'm offering this book to my guru, who is known in the world as Sakar." So, in all other books, he mentions Sanatana everywhere. He never uses any other name than Sanatana. But in this one book, he uses the name Sakar, which is like obviously a strong argument for the book having been completed before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Ramakeli and changed the name into Sanatana. Basically, yeah, the name he had at that time. Then there are two books written by Sanatana Goswami, by Rupa Goswami, where he uses this messenger format. One is called the Uddhava Sandesh, and the other one is the Hansa Dutta. So the Hansa Dutta is basically describing Srimati Radharani. She is in great separation from Krishna, and she is virtually on the edge of dying. Lalita is trying to relieve her a little, and Lalita goes to Yamuna. And as Lalita goes to Yamuna to bring some water, she finds this swan there. Then she immediately concludes the swan is the perfect messenger to carry a message to Krishna urgently, since Radharani is in this state. It can't wait. And she's trying to, first of all, convince the swan to do it. Two, then encourage the swan to do it by describing the route that the swan will go. She describes a route along the Yamuna, which more or less is supposed to take the swan to Mathura. Now, if you look at the route that is described, it's not very geographically. It's more following the narrative of the Bhagavatam. It
It doesn't look like Rupa at that time was very familiar with the location. But later you go to Uddhava Sandesh, and the Uddhava Sandesh is Krishna standing on the palace in Mathura. He's looking at Vrindavan, feeling great separation, and he's deeply thinking who could be the perfect messenger. And his conclusion is, who else than Uddhava? First of all, Uddhava is my close friend. Second of all, Uddhava is a disciple of Brihaspati. He is a very learned scholar. And therefore, Uddhava knows exactly what to say, at what time, and what words to use. He's very expert in speaking. And furthermore, Uddhava, being a relative of Krishna, is looking very similar to Krishna. So Krishna very carefully chooses his messenger, and then he sends his messenger to Vrindavan. And as he sends his messenger to Vrindavan, on the way there are different places described, and yeah, then it's like very geographical, completely like the parikrama. One is basically doing a parikrama in the Uddhava Sandesh, and at one point from Mathura we reach Chatikara. Chatikara is where we turn off from the highway to Vrindavan. And just that point, Chatikara is describing how certain bees are there, bumblebees that are looking for the nectar honey, always eager for Krishna's lotus feet. And then he describes how right behind that is the deity of Garuda Govinda. How Sridhar once took the form of Garuda, and how the Lord stood for 12 days on the back of Sridhar, manifesting different arms. And one can still see the deity of Garuda Govinda there. And then he says to Uddhava, he says, and behind that is the Kaliya Lake. He said, and the water is very sweet, you must drink it. It has changed now, it has become very sweet. Yes. So if you just look at that, that's right behind our temple. So you can basically see that the area behind the Krishna Balaram Mandir was all Kaliya Lake in the past. You see, if you look at that. That area was, according to Uddhava Sandesh, that was the Kaliya Lake. Then he describes, and to the left, okay, then you get various places and come to Govardhan and so on. So that's Uddhava Sandesh. So Uddhava Sandesh is very familiar with the area, but not the Srihansa Dutta. So that is a second argument why the Hansa Dutta would have been written before. So two major arguments are given that it was written before. One is he calls his Sanatan Goswami Sakar. The second one, he's not familiar with the location. So those are reasonable arguments. It's accepted. It was already accepted as one of the earlier works of Rupa Sanatana. The question is, before or after meeting Mahaprabhu? It looks like it's before. That's interesting. Because before, but before they were officers in the Muslim government. Before, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is a discussion between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami, is where Mahaprabhu basically said, you had fallen into a ditch filled with stool. Yeah. Yes. And is pointing out that he has been saved from a most abominable way of life. So on the one hand, we're seeing how Rupa and Sanatana became officers in the government of the Navapu Sensha. And when they were actually meeting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at that time, they were saying that they were the most fallen, more fallen than Jagai and Madai. Why more fallen than Jagai and Madai? Because Jagai and Madai were murderers. Jagai and Madai, they had killed many people, they were guilty of arson, putting fire to houses and so on. But Rupa and Sanatana said, we have protected so many Jagais and Madhavis who have, under our protection, engaged in all these sinful activities. Therefore, we are millions times more sinful than Jagai and Madhavi. Therefore, we are the most fallen. Therefore, our claim for your mercy is first.
All these dates here, we're not really going to study them today, but it does show how things are shifting from Rupa and Sanatana to the other Goswamis who are a little younger. And you can see that Raghunandas Swami, Goswami lives about another 20 years, 22 years, we can see how Jiva Goswami lives then again another 10 years more than Raghunandas Goswami.
And like that we see gradually how there's a shift of the responsibility, a succession, so to speak, of the spiritual leadership.
That's not my theme of the day, so I'm leaving this list right now if it works.
No? Try it. I hate this thing here. Yeah, I'm going to shift this. Skip this one. Skip
this whole scene. Is it? No. Something about Ramakeli. So, in Ramakeli, Ramakeli is quite an interesting place.
We can skip that.
What we are looking at here is Ramakeli. So, here's a temple to the right. There's a temple. And to the left, this small little temple there contains the padas or the footprints of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this recalled how Mahaprabhu came to Ramakeli. And in the little temple on the right side, we find the deity of Sisi Radha Madhav Mohan in Ramakeli. Now, the interesting part was that Radha Madhav Mohan were already there in the Vrindavan that they created before Mahaprabhu. Right? These deities are described to be installed before. Also, they had various holy places they established, Radhakund, Shamakund, Lalitakund, Visakhakund, and some others, just to kind of recreate the mood of Vrindavan. And just think for a moment, this is before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually went to Vrindavan, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually discovered Radhakund and Shamakund in Vrindavan. And think about it. And they already had Radhakund and Shamakund right there in Ramakeli. So it brings up a theme that is of interest to me, and that is that the external life of Rupa and Sanatana, the padas of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, the Ganga, as it looks now, looks very nice, as you can see. At the time of Rupa and Sanatana, as is described in the Bhakti Ratnakar,
there were many beautiful cottages on the banks of the Ganga and Ramakeli, and they invited different scholars from all over India to come and stay there and study there and discuss scriptures. Now, Bhakti Ratnakar is a book that gives a lot of historical information, and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhakti Ratnakar is established as an authorized scripture. So that's interesting. Although Srila Bhaktisiddhanta comments that Bhakti Ratnakar is historically not as important as Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, still Bhakti Ratnakar is accepted. Then Bhakti Ratnakar gives a lot of descriptions about Ramakeli and describes how they received many scholars, there were many discussions on scripture. So when Chaitanya Charitamrita describes to us that at one point Sanatana Goswami didn't want to go to government service any longer and stayed home and was engaged in discussions on Shastra with 25 Brahmanas, it wasn't that Sanatana Goswami had just commissioned a few Brahmanas for the occasion.
Actually, first of all, because the family was from this Karnataka background, there was a certain group of Karnataka Brahmanas
who settled also in Ramakeli, who went with them. Additionally, there were scholars visiting from all over India, and the discussions were centering on all kinds of scriptures, and some of the most prominent scholars of the time visited Ramakeli and spent time there. In the Bhakti Ratnakar, it is mentioned that when Sanatan Goswami was still very young, a young man, that one time he had a dream, and that in this dream, suddenly a Brahmin appeared, who presented him with a copy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they say, well, yeah, okay, nice. No. In those days, that was something, because they were working with handwritten manuscripts. And 18,000 verses is a lot of verses to hand copy. A Bhagavad Gita, 750, obviously it was easier to take a smaller book. So who would take on such a manuscript? So we can understand that in those days, there were just not so many public copies around. Some temples were keeping such copies. But, you know, to have a private copy of the Bhagavatam was something extraordinary. So Sanatana Goswami dreamt that he was getting a copy of the Bhagavatam from some Brahmana. Then he woke up. Oh, it was just a dream. Later that day, the Brahmana actually came and presented him the Bhagavatam. So that created this kind of feeling that it was all going on by a higher plan, by some divine arrangement, that it was ordained. And thus, he really became absorbed in the Bhagavatam. In the Krishna Lila Stava, Sanatana Goswami writes that Bhagavatam became my constant companion. So, constant companion, it means that one cannot constantly read. But it basically means that Bhagavatam was internalized. So Bhagavatam became the life and soul of Sanatana Goswami. And therefore, it's obvious that the discussions in Ramakeli were centering around Srimad Bhagavatam. That was the central text. So evidence can be made.
Here is something which is found in a book of Vobhyo Kapoor, the Goswamis of Vrindavan.
Now, I don't know what to make of the story, but I will tell you anyway.
It is basically describing that there was a stormy night. Rain and storm had played havoc in and around Goda. Inside the palanquin sat Rupa Goswami, the private secretary, Dabir Khas, of King Hussein of Bengal. And then, somehow or other, they're supposed to be a washerman and his wife, right? I don't know what to make of that, but anyway, that's the story. The washerman said to his wife, "Who's this unfortunate man going about at night when the elements are in fury?" His wife replied, "Who could it be except a dog or a thief or a slave of the king?" A lady with a sweet tongue is depicted. It looks like the creative writing of a poet. I don't believe it. Anyway, then, said the words of the washerwoman reached the ears of Rupa Goswami and struck the tenderest corner of his heart. Now, I don't know if we should go for the washerman and his wife, but we should certainly go for Rupa Goswami moving about in a palanquin between Ramakeli and Goda, the capital of the Nava, dressed in aristocratic dress of a Muslim government officer. That's how aristocracy was traveling. So, yes, that is how Rupa traveled. Okay, I've dug up a few pictures of what these palanquins kind of looked like at that time, just for your
entertainment.
Here we find something that looks almost European, and these are some of the ruins of the palace of Nawab Hussain Shah in Goda, the capital then of the government, one can still see today. And we go a little further. Come on.
yeah, you see, it looks just almost like a church. And it's like a detail of the palace. So this is supposed to be the palace then where Rupa and Sanatana were regularly residing.
Now, recently I was in Oxford, which is always an interesting place to visit if you want to find out some deeper information. And there I came across an unpublished article of a well-known scholar named Joseph O'Connell, who last year left his body. Joseph O'Connell was a scholar who his whole life studied Gaudiya Vaishnavism and knew a lot more about our tradition than all of us together, that's for sure. So, an interesting person. He met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada very much liked him, actually, and mutually so. And other scholars were questioning the historical value, the historicity of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then by saying, well, it's written by devotees, so devotees have a tendency to mystify things and just create myths. And then Joseph O'Connell wrote a good article saying, no. He said, rather, devotees, genuine devotees, who are respectable, have a desire to get the facts completely straight. And then when we look at a work like the Chaitanya Charitamrita, written by such a respectable person as Krishnadas Kaviraj, we can surely rely on its historicity. So he spoke up sometimes in our defense. Now recently, I saw this article, and in the article, he was addressing a point of how many of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were engaged in the service of Hussein Shah. Right? Although Hussein Shah is often referred to as a Nawab, Nawab means a small district king. Hussein Shah was actually the Sultan or the king of all Bengal, the king of the Nawabs, the emperor, you could say. He was the Sultan. And many, many of our leading Vaishnavas worked actually for the Muslim government, not only Rupa and Sanatana, but for example, Sivananda Sen. Sivananda Sen was a zamindar in a land area including Kumarhatta. The birthplace of Iswara Puri is there, Kavi Karnapur lived there also, and Srivas moved there after he left in 1510 when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left. Now he moved there to Kumarhatta, so important hub of Vaishnava culture in Kumarhatta there. And Sivananda Sen was there. Then we have Ambika Kalna, we have Suryadas Sarakela and Gauridas Pandit also engaged in the service. Kamalakar Pippalai, described as being engaged in government service. And I wasn't allowed to copy the articles, I just tried to remember it. That's just how many names there were. There were many, many more names. And the point was, he made a substantial point, O'Connell, and his point was there was a whole culture, a whole, not only a Hindu culture around the Nawab in his court, but there was a Vaishnav culture. And it said, and therefore, the especially in courts, there are naturally libraries kept, and these libraries are, generally speaking, libraries that are centering around drama and all these things, because after all, the kings want some entertainment without any TV and so on. So at the court, there was a lot of culture. So a lot of the arts were represented there. A rich library was there in Goda, which contained a lot of Hindu literatures. That's the case that is being made.
So that is an interesting point. Let's look at the next slide. No, try again. I hate this thing.
I hate you.
This, I hate that also, because that's a jail. That is the jail where Sanatan Goswami was supposed to be kept when he was refusing to obey the order of the Nawab or the king. He was incarcerated there for some time and he practiced out of there as we read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay, we're finished now with this. I think we'll go back.
Does it go back?
It does. Okay, we'll
go back a little more. Do something nice because I don't want to look at a jail for a long time. Go back. A little further.
That's it. Okay, so we'll just keep Mother Mahan on the screen for a while we continue speaking. So now we have two Mother Mahans here. Let me just for a moment see where I'm going with this lecture. Yeah, so after this little introduction, we just see a little bit of the question that arrives to us now is the external life and the internal life of Srila Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis before they met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you read the Chaitanya Charita Mahakavya from Murari Gupta, also known as his Kadacha's diary, it is the earliest biography about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in there is a description of the elders in the first chapter, of the elders reaching Navadvip. And it's interesting, he's got all these personalities coming to Navadvip, Advaita Acharya, Haridas Thakur, Pundarik Vijayanidhi, and then Srivas, and of course Jagannath Mishra, Sachi Mata are eventually arriving, and so on. So all these elders are appearing there, and it said that that to some extent their eternal identities were covered so that they did not know from each other who they were in the eternal pastime. But at the same time, they all felt naturally so drawn to each other. And their Krishna consciousness was just, the eternal Krishna consciousness was coming through. So maybe what is described here by Murari Gupta, who was himself 15 years older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and witnessed a portion of that era, maybe that was just Yogamaya energy of the Lord. So in the same way, when we look at Rupa and Sanatan, then it's just interesting to consider that what kind of Vaishnavas were they? Before meeting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if they already had a deity of Madan Mohan there, even before Vrindavan, that they already had a Radhakund and Shyamakund, it's quite extraordinary what kind of level of Vaishnavism they reached. I think once we start reading the Hansa Dutta, which we're about to embark on, then we get the inner message of how deep actually the Krishna consciousness of Srila Rupa Goswami was already developed. And obviously Sanatan Goswami on par with that. And that's why I wanted to give this introduction, sort of just to show the context in which the Hansa Dutta is written. And then now I want to go to Hansa Dutta. So earlier on, I mentioned that there is this genre of the messenger, and the Hansa Dute is about a swan messenger, which was there, found by Lalita. So one thing is this, is that the personalities in the book are basically Srimati Radharani, who is really the main personality in the book, although she is not like mentioned so much. But she is the main personality in the book because it's about her feeling of separation. And then Lalita is and the swan. And Lalita is just basically trying to first convince the swan, then send sort of tells the swan which way to go. But it never happens that the swan actually takes off or something. You know, you'd think, and then the swan flew away, and you know, Lalita was looking. Any dramatic writer would have tried to create a little drama of the swan taking off. It doesn't happen. Because that's not the point of the book, the action. You know, so there's like, in a way, it doesn't seem so much action. It's just one conversation. And the conversation is just existing of three parts, really. And the first part is where Lalita is introducing the idea. The second part of the idea of being a messenger, the second part is the idea of trying to make it more attractive and at the same time give some instructions of what is involved, but actually try and attract the swan. And then comes finally the message itself. The message which is describing the condition of Radharani in a very graphic way. It describes the symptoms of separation. So that's like the three parts. And Lalita is of course a somewhat, she's a little older than Srimati Radharani. She's considered in the Radha Krishna Ganadesh Deepika, which is really the lamp that lights up the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. The Radha Krishna Ganadesh Deepika is the who is who in Krishna. It describes Radha and Krishna's associates, the elders, something about the cowherd boy, something about the gopis, something about even the animals, even the ornaments of Krishna. It's a very detailed descriptions, and there you can find also some information about Lalita, who's then 27 days older than Radharani, who is who is dressed in a garment of peacock feathers, whose eternal color is like yellowish. Like that, who her mother, her father, and so on. So something about her background. And also Lalita in the Ujjwala Nilamani is identified as a Vama gopi. There are Vama gopis and Dakshin gopis, the left wing and the right wing gopis. The left wing are often rebelling against Krishna, often in a contradictory mood, whereas the right wing gopis, no matter what Krishna does, they always remain in the mood of submissive servant. Whereas the left wing are chastising. Radharani has that left wing mood, and Lalita especially has that role, often chastising Krishna. Well, that's a little background about the personalities involved in the story, and then we'll just go through the story. I have to push some buttons to get there. And, I'll try and chant the Sanskrit verses, although sometimes they're tongue twisters and I will make mistakes, but you know, just tolerate that. I still think that the mood of the Sanskrit is very nice, so even my mistakes, well, what can be done? Dukulam bibrano darita haritala juti baram java puspaseni ruchi ruchira padam bujatala tamala shamango dara hasita linan chitamuka parananda bogas burtu idime kopi purushaha. The translation that I'm using that I have digital is the one of Kusakrata. Some scholars are saying it's not the most accurate translation. There is another one done by Jan Brzezinski, also a devotee scholar, but that's, I don't have that in digital form. I don't carry the book at the moment. So, but the translation of the first verse reads, may a certain blissful person in splendid yellow silk garments, the soles of his lotus feet glorious as a host of red roses, his form dark as a tamal tree, and his mouth playfully curved in a gentle smile, appear in my heart. So, I like that translation, may a certain blissful person. And it kind of can find it in the Sanskrit, although my knowledge of Sanskrit is not perfect, but parananda spuritauridi mekopi purusha. So may a certain blissful person appear in my heart. So, yes, it's nice to think of Krishna as a blissful person. We don't usually think of anyone as a blissful person. We don't usually don't have that many blissful persons around, but to just think of Krishna like a blissful person makes him immediately attractive. I think it's very, very nicely put, because that's how it is. It's not just Krishna is so beautiful. No, he's just totally blissful. Everything about him is just bliss personified. His beauty is blissful, his nature is blissful, everything about him, and therefore he's naturally so attractive, and naturally one is automatically feeling such happiness. I kind of like it, because sometimes when Krishna is presented as being so all attractive, like I see some paintings which seem to create to me depict Krishna almost as a vain personality, but it's not vanity that is in Krishna. No, Krishna is just extremely blissful. Yada yato gopiridaya madano nandasaranam mukunda gandinyas tanayam anuvindam madhupurim tadamam kichinta sariti ganana guna parichaye agadayam badamaya payasi radha virani. Yes, now it begins with the son of Gandini. Gandini is the mother of Akrura. So here in the second verse it starts, right? It just sets the theme of the book, right? It starts with the son of Gandini. It starts with Akrura, who has that name which says that he is not cruel. I mean, the gopis, they can say more about that. They have a lot to say about that. Akrura, not cruel, not cruel. What kind of name does he have? At the request of Akrura, Krishna and Balaram left the house of Nanda Maharaj for Mathura. At that time, Srimati Radharani's mind was disrupted and she became almost mad because of extreme separation from Krishna. She experienced great mental pain and agitation, which caused her to drown in mental speculation in the river of anxiety. So, a little note to the text says, the translation of this verse is found in Chaitanya Charitamrita Antya 14:53. Srila Prabhupada comments there, see, Srimati Radharani thought, now I'm going to die. And when I die, Krishna will surely come back to see me again. But when he hears of my death from the people of Vrindavan, he will certainly be very unhappy. Therefore, I shall not die. So, okay, in the end, she didn't die. The only reason, just that we can understand, it wasn't selfish. It wasn't that ultimately, there was some trace of selfishness in Srimati Radharani. There was not. There was no selfishness. One might say, okay, she's dying because Krishna is not there. Alright, you know. But it's Krishna's choice. He doesn't want to be there. So, why can't she just happily accept Krishna's choice if she is totally dedicated to him? It looks like selfishness. But the way it is explained there, it's very clear. I will die. Yes, surely I will die. But no, I cannot die because Krishna, that would make Krishna very unhappy. Alright. Then I shall not die, but I will almost die. I will die, you know, to the point where like I'm barely alive. Yeah? That's how much I will die. How can I do anything else in separation of Krishna? Kadachit kiraknim vikataitum antargatam asu sahali vilebe Taradita manayamunatatim Chiradasyas chitram parichita Kutiravalokana Avasta tastaras puttam Atasusipta priyasakki. Told you I would stumble in Sanskrit. One day, when Srimati Radharani was feeling much affliction because of her separation from Krishna, she went to the bank of the Yamuna with some of her friends. There, Srimati Radharani saw a cottage wherein she and Krishna had experienced many loving pleasures, and by remembering those incidents, she immediately became overwhelmed by dizziness. The dizziness was very prominently visible. It's also a translation from Srila Prabhupada taken from the Nectar of Devotion. So this is just all sort of the preliminary situation, just establishing this, the separation of Radharani, how much she is actually overwhelmed. Tada nispandangi kalita nalina natnalini palavakulai parinahat premnam akusala sata sankiridiyai Drigambo gambiri kritam hira putri lahari vi vilina dulinam pari pari vavre pari janai. Fallen in the dust and her limbs motionless, she was surrounded by friends holding lotuses, their hearts out of love filled with hundreds of fears and their tears flooding the Yamuna's waves. The tears were flooding the Yamuna's waves. Usually it's the other way around, you know. The Yamuna is flooding the land. So one can just imagine what a scene it was. These associates of Radharani were so much sharing her feelings that their tears were like going in streams into the Yamuna and flooding the Yamuna.
Tatastam yastangim urasi laritaya kamalini palasai kalindi salila sisire vijitatanum parabrita svasankura chalita kantim kalayatam saki sandohanam pramada parasali dvanirabhut.
When her limbs resting on Lalita's breast were fanned with many lotus petals cool with Yamuna water, and her throat moved with the sprout of a breath, her watching friends made a joyful sound. Well, at least there was some breath. That's the joyful sound, you know. At least there's some hope. She's still not dying. Okay, so it shows us a very intense scene. And the separation is something, obviously, very difficult to understand for us from a mundane point of view. If this is the topmost Krishna consciousness, one might just think, well, I'll pass. Thank you. I think, love of God's not for me. So far I liked Krishna consciousness, but at this point, I think if this is what the topmost devotee is going through, thank you. Very kind. But the difficult thing to understand in this separation is that it immediately awakens remembrance of Krishna. And the remembrance of Krishna is as blissful as meeting Krishna himself. Since this certain blissful personality is so extremely blissful that even by remembering him one becomes blissful. See, that's very difficult for us to understand, because in the material world people are not very blissful, and if we get a little bit of joy out of them, then we immediately have to go to face to face, and even that, you know, like immediately to the gross action, like. But because Krishna is such a blissful person, just remembering Krishna is already so satisfying, so overwhelmingly blissful. And therefore in this separation, which leads to such intensified remembrance, therefore it is the highest, because it brings us to the deepest meditation on the blissful personality. And immediately, the bliss emanating from him takes over the consciousness, and therefore the separation becomes blissful. Whereas here, the prince and the princess have been separated, and they're just fasting till death, and it's just misery until they're reunited, happy end, and they live forever happily forever after. That's our mundane conception, and it's very difficult to understand. But because here the remembrance doesn't fulfill, but the remembrance of Krishna is very fulfilling. Did I read this text? Did I read this Nidayam cake or not?
No.
No, okay. I have an echo today. He's quick on the draw, this one of another. He just pulled out his little computer with the. And his chant in Sanskrit. Nidayam ke panke ruha dala vitam kasya lalita tato radam niraharana sarana mista charana milantam kalindi pulina bhuvi kevan chita gatin tadar sagre kanchin madura virutam sveta karutam. Sveta karutam, white swan. The swan is coming on stage. Placing Radha on a bed of lotus petal to fetch some water, Lalita put her feet on the path. On the Yamuna's shore, she saw a graceful and sweet warbling white swan approach her. Taraloka stukacha vasita ridhya sadaramaso pranamam sansanti lagu lagu san sajya samvidam vitakanta sajohari sadasi sandesaharane varam dutam menetam atilalitam mantalalita. Her heart encouraged by seeing the swan, anxious Lalita cautiously approached it, respectfully bowed down before it and praised it. She thought the grateful swan an ideal messenger to carry a letter to Lord Hari's assembly. You find in the Ujjvala Nilamani it is mentioned that in a state of separation, the gopis, Radharani also, they practically see anything and everything as a messenger. Immediately, it's like they just see messengers everywhere. We of course know the famous story of the bee and Krishna, or the bee, this is the Uddhava story. While Uddhava is speaking to the gopis, Radharani is speaking to a bee, taking it as a messenger of Krishna. Some commentators actually said that the bee was Krishna. And maybe the bee was Krishna, maybe the bee was not Krishna. But Krishna anyway heard everything. Right? That's for sure. So there are these messengers. You know, in this case, a swan. Amar sat premer syam sapadi dadati kansamatane pavritta hansi asram abhilasitam sansiturnaso natasya dosa yam yat iva vivagam pratati tapati nakasmin visrambam disati hari bhakti pranayita. Wrapped in the anger of love for Krishna, she told the swan of her desires. She's not at fault for speaking to a bird. Where will a girl overcome with love for Lord Hari not place her faith? Okay, yes. So, in case any of us might think, come on, you know, how could she be so naive to choose the swan as a messenger? Yeah, but we are rational. We are governed. See, our Krishna consciousness is not very strong. And it is mixed with philosophy. So we are rational, and therefore we say, well, you know, a reasonable messenger, you know, could not be a swan. But Lalita is not rational. She is overcome by ecstatic love, which leaves such a burning need to have a messenger that need just has to be filled. So the first possible option, yes. And she has identified this one. Pavitresu prayo virachaya sitoyesu vasatin pramodam nalike vahasi visadatma svayamasi atoham dukarta saranam abalatvam gatavati nayansa satpakse vrajati kadachit vibhalatam. You live in pure waters. You find happiness among the lotus stems. Your heart is pure. For this reason, I, a very unhappy woman, take shelter of you. A request to a saintly person is never fruitless. So I like that point. A request to a saintly person is never fruitless. And it puts a big responsibility on a saintly person. Really, if you think about it, we are all meant to be saintly persons. It's not that we... because this is part of the story. Who is the messenger? Who is meant to be the messenger? It's not the swan. Gradually, as the narration unfolds, it may dawn upon us that we have to be the messenger. We have to be the duta. And we have to be qualified as the duta. Now the swan is highly qualified because the swan is living in pure waters and the swan is eating only lotus stems. So one must reside in a sacred place. One must take only Krishna prasadam. One must be pure, in other words, pure in his activities, which will purify the consciousness. So our residence must always be a sacred place. There's no question. That is an important principle. Maybe in the course of our preaching. Oh, didn't Nityananda go into the liquor store? Didn't Nityananda, when Nityananda is seen in the house of a prostitute,
Isn't that the case? Didn't Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda go to a sannyasi who was staying with a woman? Didn't they even take some fruits there? And didn't they only leave that place when the sannyasi offered alcohol? Then it got too much. So a preacher may go into sinful places, but cannot live there, cannot reside there. One must reside in a place of purity. That place cannot just be external. One's residence must be in one's heart. One must be face to face with Krishna. Therefore, early in the morning, we are not performing our sadhana for the sake of just completing a vow. In the morning, we are meant to get absorbed in our worship. We are meeting Krishna face to face, really, when we are chanting the holy name, which is identified as non-different from Krishna. We're meeting Krishna face to face, and there, we are making our offering, because the chanting of the holy name is a mystic process. It is a process where, on the one hand, we are producing the sound, and with our lips, our consciousness concentrated, we're fixing the mind, the ear is there. And as we are making the sound with our lips, our voice, and are concentrated on making the sound, then part two, that is part one, the offering that we are making. And part two is that because the sound itself is Krishna, then Krishna manifests to us. And we hear the holy name. There we are getting the darshan of Krishna through that sound. So these two aspects are there. And that's very interesting. We must meet Krishna. We cannot just mechanically chant. And then our residence comes at the lotus feet of Krishna. Then we can be the messenger. Otherwise, how can we be a messenger? What kind of messenger are we when our residence is not at the lotus feet of Krishna? When it says, Ridaya Kandare Hu Sachinandana, that in the innermost core of the heart must be Sachinandan, or the Supreme Lord, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. What does that mean? Meaning to say, what is our actual interest? Our actual interest must be fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna. There we must, that we must cultivate in our practices. Otherwise, how can we be a messenger? So, today we're sort of beginning. Let us realize that we are to be the messenger. And if we can, in our reading of the Hansa Dutta, identify with the swami. Right? As you always have to identify with one hero, right? The swan is us. Chiram vismrittayasman viraha dahana jala vikala kalavan sanandam vasati maturiyam maduripu tatitam sandesam swamanasi samadhyanikinam bhavankshipram tasya shravana padavim sangamayatu. Forgetting us who are tormented by the flames of separation from him, artistic Krishna happily lives in Mathura. Please place this message in your heart and at once put it on the path to his ears. So you begin the accusations, right? Oh yes, there are plenty of accusations. And, you know, some of them seem very reasonable. Right? Some of them seem quite reasonable. We can certainly appreciate that Lalita is right, that Krishna is indeed insensitive, that Krishna is indeed cruel, right, for acting the way he does, and how can he justify
such kind of actions. It appears, at least, to be so. So it begins here. And forgetting us, who are tormented by the flames of separation from Him, artistic Krishna happily lives in Mathura. Just see. Artistic Krishna enjoying artistic Mathura with the artistic ladies from Mathura. And meanwhile, our feelings are not considered. Just see.
What is artistic?
Artistic Krishna. What is artistic? You know what art is? If someone is artistic, he is very creative, he is dressing very, very nicely, opulently, he is amazingly playing his flute, he knows very well how to look at his best. Even in the middle of killing some demon or something, Krishna always looks elegant. If photos could be taken, Krishna would be the star of any photo, for sure. You have these kind of people. Like our Sachinandan Maharaj, he's also good, you know. He goes to Australia, and I've been going to Australia for years, I tell you, you know. He goes to Australia, and the first picture we see Sachinandan Swami sitting next to a kangaroo, you know. And you go, how did he do it, you know? I mean, coming to this country for so many years, right? I never got such a picture, you know. I said, maybe he hired the kangaroo. Yeah, no, that's also possible. But whatever it was, there he was, you know. Yeah, nowadays with Photoshop you can trick a few things. But it was a good pic. It looked real. Next picture. Sorry, I see where it was. May all obstacles be cast aside. May your path be easy, placing happiness and mercy in your heart. Rise at once. The running and playing Gopa boys will gaze at you with wide open eyes. So now comes the incentive. You know, blessings. So, again, we are the swan, don't forget. May all obstacles be cast aside. May your path be easy. Placing happiness and mercy in your heart, rise at once. So these are the blessings that are upon us. Just as Lalita, as a superior, as a spiritual master in a sense, is blessing the messenger, blessing the swan. This is the blessing of the spiritual master. May all obstacles be cast aside. That blessing is there upon us. And we're depressed. We're thinking, I'll never make it. I have to struggle so much in my spiritual life. You don't know. You don't know what I'm going through, actually. I mean, I'm going through unique problems. No, really. No, I'm honestly speaking, I understand everyone has problems, but I am going through problems that are absolutely unique and extremely complicated and actually such an hindrance, such an obstacle. I mean, it is practically impossible for me. But the blessing is already there. May all obstacles be cast aside. Cast aside. Cast them aside. Cast aside. May your path be easy. Your path is easy if you think about it. Everything is taken care of. Why this unnecessary fear? Who will take care of me? Oh, what will happen to me? Where will I be? It's not working out. I'm not getting what I wanted. Oh no, now where will I be? My dream has not come true. What am I getting now? Now I'm living in a reality which is not what I always dreamt that it should be. Now what will I be? It will be fine. Just take it as it is. Stop trying to live according to your own plan. Just accept Krishna's plan. It's better than ours. Better. Oh, but my plan is very good. No. No. Oh no. Oh no. Leave this plan. Leave it. No. May your path be easy. The blessing is already there. It will get easier and easier. It will get very easy. Oh yes, very blissful.
Yeah, yeah, it's easy to say for you. You are Krishna conscious and I'm not. Why not? Don't worry, Krishna. I said it on Janmashtami, and I say it again. Krishna penetrates. I use that verse, you know, where we established that Krishna will conquer. Yeah? Krishna will conquer. He will be victorious. He will enter into our hearts. And even the little bit of reluctance that we have gradually will be broken down by Krishna's blissful presence. Can you do it? He's just too blissful. Krishna is Bhagavan. He is, and there are different definitions given of Bhagavan. And Jiva Goswami comments in one of the definitions that he gives of Bhagavan is Bhajaniya Gunavasista. And which, if you translate it a little free, you can say that the qualities of Krishna are so amazing, he's irresistible. Irresistible. That's Krishna. Irresistible. Savai dakti sindhu katina matina danapatina yaya ninye tunam pasupa yuvati jivanapati tava kantavyate nikila jagat eka pratitaya padavya bhamyanam tilaka kila darsahanagari. It's good poetry, isn't it? Beautiful Sanskrit, these verses. That's why I'm chanting them. And yeah, if you all have computers, we can all chant together, but it will never work. You'll never get it synchronized, I think. O Tilak of the saintly devotees, taking the path famous in all the worlds, by which hard-hearted Akrura quickly took away the ocean of handsomeness that rules the young gopi's life, go to the city of the Dasarathas. Okay. So here we are. It's natural. We go the path that Krishna went. That's the only path. The only path interesting to us is wherever Krishna went. There we'll go. We'll follow Krishna. It's so simple. Krishna consciousness is not difficult. Just follow what Krishna did. Follow where Krishna went. Read about it. Hear about it. Go. And each time when we make an effort in that direction, hear about it. Either may Krishna, as we read many times in the scripture, may the Lord walk on the path of my eyes. May the Lord walk on the path of my ears. We have heard many times. So, in this way, let us somehow or other follow the path that the Lord went. And it's that. It's not that Krishna consciousness is something where we take a decision. I'm convinced. I'm totally convinced. Prabhupada has got the truth, and I know it, and I'm convinced. And therefore, from today on, I've decided I'm going to be Krishna conscious. It's a little of an adjustment. But I'm going to be Krishna conscious. I'm really going to be Krishna conscious. God. But why am I not Krishna conscious? I'm trying to be Krishna conscious, and I'm really not Krishna conscious, and I want to be Krishna conscious, but I can't be Krishna conscious, and I'm trying to be Krishna conscious. Just be Krishna conscious. By following the path of Krishna. Following the path of Krishna is what will make us Krishna conscious. It is so simple. It's not complicated. We simply have to follow him. Yeah, we have to go with Krishna. And what did he do? I don't know, let's have a look. Let's hear about it. Huh? Yes, the swan is going along the path in the Yamuna.
And what's he going to see there?
Yes. Something is going to come. Coward boys are already waiting. Okay. That takes us to Krishna. Coward boys. We're getting there. Let's go see what else is going on. In this way, if we simply follow this path that Krishna went, we can't go wrong. It is so simple. That's how to be Krishna conscious. Not by decision. But most of us, interesting enough, are trying to be Krishna conscious by decision. I'm going to be Krishna conscious. I will be Krishna conscious. I shall be Krishna conscious. And then once a year, we go before the spiritual master in the Vyasa Puja and we admit that we have not been Krishna conscious. We're trying to be Krishna conscious by decision. That's not possible. Oops. I missed something. Yeah. Galat baspa sara pluta davala gandam rikka driso vidu yante yatra pravavana dana resa vipasaha Tvaya vigyatavya haricharana sanga pranayino Dhruvam cha chakram vitrati sagrasatangasya padavi. O passionate lover of your swan maid, go to the path by the chariot touched by Lord Hari's feet, a path where the deer-eyed gopis, a flood of tears streaming down their pale cheeks, were tortured by Kamadeva. Okay, here Lalita is trying to impress upon the swan that the swan can have some sympathy, that the swan also knows what it's like, right, to be caught up in love affairs, and that therefore the swan can appreciate the tragedy that's going on and should feel some compassion. Compassion means we can understand, we experience ourselves the same thing, then we will not experience, we cannot do something for others who are going through what we are going through. This sharing. So she's appealing to the compassion of the swan in this way. Because without compassion, how can one be a messenger? Of course, I have thought about compassion as a topic and dealt with the topic. Every year I've been going to Mongachi, particularly in Mayapur, the place of Vasudev Dutta, to meditate on Vasudev Dutta's extraordinary compassion. Vasudev Dutta, who was ready to take the all the sinful reactions of the whole universe upon him. And every year we went there praying and meditating and speaking on Vasudev Dutta. Subsequently, I went to Bangladesh and I went to the birthplace of Vasudev Dutta, and I spoke there, right, on that, in that particular place, and meditated further on Vasudev Dutta. And gradually I began to think, how can one be compassionate if one is not experiencing something better? When one is experiencing that Krishna consciousness is blissful, only then can one be really compassionate. Otherwise, it's artificial. Otherwise, we are just trying to get into a frame of mind and trying to be compassionate. But when we are actually experiencing the happiness of Krishna consciousness, then compassion becomes really possible. Otherwise, it will be hard. So yes, that happiness is not a mystery. That happiness is not something, when will it happen? Right? It's not that when we are in Krishna consciousness and still not happy, that thing like, yeah, I'm trying so much and still not happy for years now, and it's just not happening, and I don't know what to do about it. It simply means we are not following the path of Krishna.
It simply means we are not spending our time in absorbing ourselves in Krishna, his activities, and then glorifying those activities to the world. Yeah? If that's what we would be doing, then everything would just become perfect. But we have excuses. We have excuses. We say, yeah, but I'm alone. I need companionship. I mean, if only I have companionship, then I can do it. I'm alone. What mundane companion can satisfy the heart? Since when has any mundane relationship ever satisfied the heart? Even the wives of the demigods are not happy. So it is described in Bhagavatam. They're enjoying on the banks of the heavenly Alakananda, and yet still unfulfilled. If we are unfulfilled in our life, we should not blame the external circumstances. We should blame our attachment to wanting the material circumstances to be according to a script that we have written. And we should rather just simply follow the path of Krishna, absorb ourselves in the activities of Krishna, and just glorify Krishna. And then everything becomes blissful. And then we'll see whether we'll be alone or not alone. The more one is getting absorbed like that, and the more one is Krishna conscious, the people will never leave us alone. Yeah? They're going to see how many people are just looking at Srila Prabhupada for inspiration. And how many people were just turning to him for inspiration constantly. Then, where's the question of loneliness? One who is with Krishna is never alone. I think this is one thing about Srila Prabhupada that sort of really stands out, because he went all alone. Into those harsh conditions in New York we heard about yesterday and so on. But he was never alone. He was never alone, always very close to Krishna. So that's the only way to actually be really happy. Okay. Maybe I'll skip one Sanskrit, because it's just a short verse with not so much meaning. Sip the sweet Jambu dark Yamuna water. Eat some lotus stems, soft and splendid as moonlight. For a moment, rest under a great tree, and then, O friend, happily go to the city of the Rishis. Next text, 15. Balad apradanti ratapatikam. Is the RT already going on? Oh, he was very quiet. I'm going to end there. Balat akradanti rata patikam akrura minitam vidura abhiri patir anuyayu yena ramanam tamadu pantanam rachaya charitarta bhavatute virajanti sarvapari paramahan stitirayam. Fly over the path where the passionately crying gopis followed their lover as he went on a Krura's chariot, and you will become the greatest of swans. Greatest of swans means a paramahansa, of course. Yeah, it will be. So, of course, Rupa Goswami put a lot of double meaning in this verse. You'll become. Just fly over that path where Krura took the gopis. Basically, follow that whole experience as we are going through the whole, and if we seriously become absorbed in this, we can become the greatest of swans. We can become Paramahansa. So that is the promise that Rupa Goswami is offering us today,
And that is where we end part one of this seminar today, and a promise where possibly we can come to the perfect swan stage, the swans who can separate milk from water, so it is said, is the symbol of one who can separate spirit from matter. And therefore, even in the middle of the most material conditions, the swan-like, the topmost swan-like personalities will only select spiritual substance. And therefore, they're not affected by anything material, because they're always absorbed in that transcendental nature. And this is the path to reach there by following our swan messenger. That is Rupa Goswami's point. And that's quite a promise. And so let us see how much further the text will take us in the next few days on an inner journey of growth and depth. And let us see what we will encounter in what is to come. See if there's a question or two, a comment. So please.
When we saw Anavadan Mohan, I was remembering, I think I heard it from Radhana Swami, that through Janava Mata, actually Radhavani came, that before only Krishna was worshipped. So I was also very interested to know how could it be that even before meeting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they already had this conception or understanding of Radha and Krishna being together.
Yeah, when we hear such statements that to Janava Mata, Radharani came, then we understand that that's another occasion, much later. Okay? So it's not that Radharani was first worshipped only at the time of Janava Mata, because Janava Mata became influential at the time of Narottama Thakur. She was like the presiding personality in the Kateri event, which was much, much later. Basically, what Radhanath Maharaj described is that the movement of Lord Chaitanya has three major places, three hubs: Vrindavan, Bengal, and Jagannath Puri. In Jagannath Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu resided there, and of course there were some major personalities like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, even Ramananda Rai, Maharaj Prataparuda. Many pastimes took place, Rata Yatra, and so on. But somehow or other, Vrindavan particularly was the place where the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became fully outlined, because the Goswamis there had developed the theology. From Puri, Lord Nityananda was sent back to Bengal to start preaching there, and he preached, and his technique was kirtan, and then through kirtan, everyone became enlightened about Krishna consciousness, but they didn't quite know what it was. But it was ecstatic. And they were all part of something extremely ecstatic and going along with it, but exactly what it was they didn't know, and philosophically things were all over the place. Then Narottam was sent in with the books of the Goswamis, and specifically in Bengal there were many experts who were copying manuscripts. It was hard to get manuscripts copied, so they sent it to Bengal to get them all copied there, and then they could make many copies of the manuscripts. So Narottam had many copies made in Kateri, right? Many. And then Srinivas, the manuscripts got stolen by his Maharaj Birhambir, they got recovered, the Maharaj became a devotee. Then Srinivas engaged the Maharaj in making also thousands of copies. And meanwhile, Shamananda from the royalty in Orissa got thousands of copies. So all these copies were brought back of all the Goswami books to Kateri. And in Kateri, everyone got a copy of these books, these Goswami books, like
many of the books that we have today, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, and Upadesa Mukta Bhakti, also Mukta Sindhu, and such manuscripts they got. Then six sets of deities were installed in Kateri to create a place of worship in Bengal, where basically everyone could come, so that there would be books which would give the Siddhanta, and then there would be a central place of pilgrimage where everyone could come. And then these amazing bhajans were being held and so on. And Janava Mata particularly brought Radharani into the situation there at Kateri, so to make it more complete. Right? So then we had the whole program ready to establish bona fide Goswami Krishna consciousness in Bengal. And finally the Chaitanya Charitamrita came in and just was the final book which sealed everything. And then, now the Royal Asiatic Society in Calcutta still has thousands of manuscripts from these Goswami books which are found from around that era. So there were not just the Kateri festival, but there were a number of such festivals in other places as well, all with the aim to distribute the literatures all over Bengal. And that really kind of purified the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Radharani was worshipped before, long before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by the Goswamis in Vrindavan, and and as we now see, it appears to be that Madhava Mohan was worshipped before in Ramakeli. Of course, one may accuse that this is a fabrication, this is some story, this is not true. Actually, it was much later. Possibly so, we cannot deny that, history is such a thing. But there is a lot of indications from here and there and everywhere that really Madhava Mohan was there at the time with Radha in Krishna worship, which is amazing. Mm.
First of all, a little comment, I have two short questions. Yeah. Historically, there was worship of Radharani going on long before the reign of ease of Radharani established in Braj. And Purusha Bodhini Shruti speaks about Radharani just part of the Atharva Veda, the tradition and the list of the Purusha Bodhini Shruti. And we're in our next Bhimma magazine, we're printing a verse from a book, I can't remember the name of it, it's like from 2500 BC. Which speaks about Radharani.
Yeah.
A couple of quick questions, Mark. In Prema Vilas by Nityananda Das, it says that Rupa Goswami was married before he came to Mahaprabhu. Which seems to make sense. As a chief minister, that kind of position, you'd like.
Yeah.
Have you ever found any information about that?
No. It's really only there that we find such a reference. And one could imagine that it's true. But it's just not at all. No, A, it's not relevant, of course, for the spiritual significance, and B, there's just no further information. And unfortunately, historically, the Prema Vilas doesn't have such a high prestige. So it's difficult to really make a big case. I mean, there's lots of information about further family, a sister is also being mentioned as being a sister, but we don't hear anything more about the sister, but there is a particular reference about the sister. There are reference to many more brothers, but I think that really one could, someone could go really deep into that. But it doesn't change the essence of the whole
pastime, and I've particularly, my interest is on this question, how much of the internal life is really manifesting and how much externally the other life is covered, covers the internal life. So, okay, a wife would be an added covering, you could say, like being grihasta. Fine, that could well be. But our focus is on the amazing internal realization already. Look at the Hansadutta, look at the sentiments that I described there. That's no longer ABC. Right? That's like highly evolved. So what's coming out here is very deep. And like of all the dutta, liturgies or descriptions of this kind of genre, this one by far stands out as the most refined and the most intricate one, by far exceeding Kalidas or anyone. And that's Rupa Goswami before meeting what to speak, what happened after. Obviously, we cannot by in any way diminish the mercy of Mahaprabhu and that he got. I mean, it must have multiplied things many, many fold. It must have awoken many, many things. So I'm not trying to minimize the influence of Mahaprabhu with this presentation, and by no means. But still, it's amazing to see the level of Krishna consciousness. And that we're often not aware in our movement, and I felt that that's what I wanted to bring out, you know. And then, okay, then I'm kind of sometimes using the Hansadutta like a trampoline to jump up, to bounce around, to throw out some ideas and thoughts. And I hope that my somersaults are acceptable to you. I've taken a lot of extra time, so you can have your last point. But I take a lot of extra time. Tomorrow I'll try not to do it. Pujari was so quiet, and then I expected like at least, you know, pop, 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 nothing, you know.
It's wanted to, we don't want to interrupt.
Yeah, not the smallest bell, even like tiptoeing, I didn't hear nothing. Suddenly I smelled something.
Just a quick question, were you able to go inside the prison and stuff?
No. We'll send someone else to go to jail. That's it. Never think about going into prison. Okay, we'll carry on tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Rupa Goswami ki jai.